Chapter 19, The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth Book by Jane Roberts. Seth, next chapter 19, The Concentration of Energy, Beliefs, and the Present Point of Power. The concentration of energy follows your beliefs. Many beliefs, not negative in themselves, but overemphasized, lead to what certainly appear to be negative results. This material is highly important to many of you who find yourself in situations with which you are not pleased. I am using Rupert as an example for several reasons. Many of you have a tendency to believe that anyone with such abilities as Rupert has no problems or challenges. Rupert has often said, "Some of my correspondents expect me to be completely healthy, wealthy, and wise, and indeed beyond any human feelings," and he is quite correct. Numbers of you are looking for a state of peace, in which there is a static sort of bliss, with all questions forever answered and all problems solved. Some of you think that this will somehow be miraculously accomplished for you. If you recognize the power of your own being, you would know that it ever seeks greater realms of creativity and experience, in which new challenges are inherent, for all problems are challenges. In Rupert's case, he began with a group of ideas and beliefs that only became restrictive when carried to extremes. Rob Note C, Section 645, Session in Chapter 11. Seth, in your own experiences, many of you may find yourselves concentrating upon certain areas of activity with such energy that you ignore others, considering them restrictions. Rupert's condition involved a situation in this life. Some of you may find yourselves concentrating upon the physical aspects of existence, which are themselves quite legitimate, but to the exclusion of other important elements. In larger terms, such focusing, in particular areas, can involve an entire life situation, reincarnationally speaking, where you choose ahead of time, so to speak, to concentrate your attention in certain areas rather than others. You may pick for yourself a body that does not perform normally, or a mind that is not up to par in usual terms. Your given situation at birth, therefore, is one in which you cannot manipulate adequately in whatever way you have chosen. If you have decided upon a situation in which a critical organic lack or disability is involved and are born with a severe disease, for example, then that is the context in which you will experience this particular focus in corporeal reality. There will be a reason for it, and that reason will lie in those abilities that you have left free and open for yourself to pursue. All existences are simultaneous. Within the bounds of creaturehood, certain things are possible and certain things are not. You cannot regenerate a limb or grow a new one. You can cure yourself of an incurable disease if you realize that your point of power is in the present. Whatever your situation, you have chosen it for a reason. If it involves a circumstance that cannot be altered in physical terms, then you have settled upon it as a framework in order to enhance and use other abilities in concentrated form. The main point is not to concentrate upon the liabilities, but to pursue those abilities that you have, for the great energies of your personality will be directed in those avenues. Now, that is the end of dictation. One personal note. Rob notes, Seth added a few lines for Jane, then described a method by which I could help her work with her own beliefs. Seth, do you follow me? Rob, yes, if I can do it. Rob notes louder with humor. Seth, you can! My heartiest wishes to you both, then, and a fond good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. End at 12:05 a.m. Session 667, May 30, 1973. Reading from The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth book by Jane Roberts. Seth, good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, dictation. Rupert was working with alterations of consciousness this afternoon, At the same time, he had the radio playing softly. The rock music program was interpreted by an announcement having to do with the Indianapolis Speed Car Racing Exhibition. Rob notes the 57th Indianapolis 500-mile race. Seth. One driver had already been severely injured, Rob notes on Monday, and the race put off on that account and because of inclement weather, Rob notes on Tuesday, finally began today. As it progressed, the radio announcements continued also, and Rupert learned that another very severe accident had occurred. Beside this man, not a driver, was killed by an emergency vehicle speeding to the scene. The victim was connected with the race, however. Rob notes as a crewman, a subsequent note, the driver involved in this accident died a little over a month later. Seth. As he resumed normal consciousness, Rupert found himself wondering about the great violence involved and the entire situation in which such people placed themselves. He often has the radio on when he is working with alternate states of consciousness, by the way, using it as a point of reference. Some of the material in the last chapter should help to explain the reasons for frameworks in which violence is built in, so to speak, and indeed becomes a challenging context through which reality is perceived. The situation is one of danger, yet is chosen by those involved and is not inflicted upon them. In somewhat the same way, entire life contexts are selected that might appear to be incomprehensible, foolhardy, or even insane to an observer. These lifetime organizations may involve very drastic physical disabilities from birth. From the outside, it seems impossible that anyone would choose such a background, such a highly restricted or even painful situation in which to live. From that viewpoint, birth defects or lifetime diseases of any kind make no sense. No one begins a race with a handicap, you may say, but that is obviously not the case. Individuals have often chosen such situations precisely as incentives, and many great men have done so. This does not mean that such disabilities are necessary. At any point that an individual realizes his point of power is in the present, he will not need a barrier to test himself against, or to focus him in what he thinks of as the proper direction. You live many lives simultaneously. You often think of these as reincarnational existences, one before the other. If you are severely ill and believe that the reasons for your symptoms exist in a past life, that you must put up with it, then you will not recognize that your point of power is in the present, and you will not believe in the possibility of recovery. Again, even so-called incurable diseases can be healed as long as this does not involve regenerations not possible within the context of creaturehood. In your terms, birth defects of whatever kind are chosen before this life. This is done for many reasons, just as people chose to be ill in this life regardless of the duration involved. That is, a certain psychic framework is set up through which an individual decides, ahead of time, to experience an entire life situation. Some information on this has been given in my other writings. Rob notes, see both the Seth material and Seth Speaks. We've also accumulated considerable unpublished material on the subject. Seth. A person with several existences stressing intellectual achievement might purposefully then decide upon a life in which mental abilities are beyond him, and the emotions allowed a full play that he had denied them earlier. Since all existences are simultaneous, this simply means his stressing certain aspects in this life at the expense of others, you would say, and setting up a frame of reference that may seem to be limiting. On the other hand, the personality involved may see this as a most rewarding and expansive experience in which the emotions are allowed freedoms ordinarily denied. Characteristically, some personalities prefer lifetime experiences in which accomplishment and development follows an even course. Others demand great contrast. One of the latter may be miserably poor in one life luxuriously rich in another, and intellectual giant in still another, a great athlete, and then a complete invalid. Individual differences operate, then, in the kinds of life situations chosen. In many cases, it is the family, rather than the incapacitated member, who questions and does not understand, as in cases of severely mentally retarded children, for example. Yet, in all instances, not only do children choose their parents ahead of time, but parents choose their children, of course. In such a situation, there are fulfillments to be gained from the parent's standpoint. There are always opportunities of growth and unusual creativity possible under those conditions for all involved. That is the reason why the framework was chosen. The same applies to seeming tragedies, such as accidents or severe illnesses that come at any time. On an individual basis, a grave illness, for instance, will represent the adoption of a particular highly intense focus in which a given aspect of unusual experience is deliberately cut out or denied. The context of life itself must then be magnified along other lines. In somewhat the same manner, this also applies to those born in extreme poverty or in the most seemingly unfortunate of family situations. The life challenge is inherent within the problem itself and springs from it. Usually, though not always, a peculiar personal achievement results precisely because of the given difficulty. Rob notes intently. Now, this accomplishment need not involve some great artwork or invention or political leadership, for example, though it may. Often the successful activity represents a challenge on the part of the personality who sets it in terms of psychological creativity and the overall enrichment of experience. Those involved, such as family, will have acquiesced to the situation earlier. Often, particularly in the case of mental or physical birth defects, the incapacitated person will be accepting that role not only because of personal reasons. He or she will also be choosing that part of the family as a whole. Highly intelligent parents, therefore, may find themselves with a retarded child. If they place a great value upon intellect at the expense of the emotions, then the child may be acting out for them the emotional spontaneity of which they are so afraid themselves. You may take a break. A birth defect is obvious and sets up certain conditions that cannot be ignored. Many ordinary illnesses also involve the family group to some degree. The predominating beliefs of the sick person will always be paramount, however. The group situation will encompass an acquiescence on the part of other family members. Now understand that the same thing applies in the case of unusual achievements. In those instances, the achiever's beliefs predominate. And yet, apart from this, he may also be acting out the unrealized aspirations of his family members, or of the group in which he is intimately involved. There will always be reasons for such relationships. Many great contrasts of social nature have the same kind of inner meaning. Here, whole groups of individuals choose particular life situations in which, for example, poverty and illness predominate, while other areas of the world, or of any given nation, enjoy the highest technological advances, wealth, and prosperity. Separately, each personality has a private reason for such an affiliation. But on other levels, through the contrasting focuses of poverty and wealth, scientific accomplishments or the lack of them, opposites are brilliantly apparent. Technological process, followed as a major focus, automatically portrays its benefits and its disadvantages. A nation which pursues this course is like one individual who primarily follows a strictly objective male, externally oriented path in terms of your Western understanding. Certain values have been stressed in your country, particularly in the recent present. These attributes were pursued at the expense of others for individual reasons and those in mass. The rest of the world agreed to such actions, however, and various portions of it took entirely different courses, so that in your experience, global society, would show a kaleidoscope of varying focuses and their results. On a much smaller scale and to different degrees, any tribe, town, family, or group will show the same tendencies, and from the shared experience, each individual will learn and grow. A person may choose a great talent instead, through which he or she will perceive reality and concentrate all experience. This will serve as a formidable focus, yet by its nature it may often preclude other experiences that many individuals find quite normal. Some artists with great abilities may shut out intellectual maturity, utilizing native emotional qualities to such an extent and with such intensity that the mental reasoning faculties are largely shunted aside. Without rational illumination, the emotional elements may be so unwieldy that the artist, for all of his spontaneous expression, cannot relate in any kind of permanent situation of an intimate nature. For reason and emotion are natural counterparts. Someone else may choose to focus upon intellectual achievement to such a degree that he shuts out all true closeness. And though he can accept a permanent relationship, he will not experience the emotional richness that others may derive from a much briefer encounter. Therefore, each of you choose ahead of time in your terms the kind of framework through which you will contend with this life situation. This applies personally and collectively. Those who believe in reincarnation will ask, "What about past life beliefs? And even if I forget the idea of guilt, am I bound to follow the rules of karma?" Rob notes, see Session 614 in Chapter 2. Seth, since all is simultaneous, your present beliefs can alter your past ones, whether from this life or a previous one. Existences are open-ended. Now, with your ideas of progressive time and the resulting beliefs in cause and effect, I realize this is difficult for you to understand. Yet, within the abilities of your creaturehood, your current beliefs can change your experience. You can restructure your reincarnational past in the same way that you can restructure the past in this present life, as explained in Session 657 through 58 in Chapter 15, notes Rob. Now, Seth, in the center of the page. The point of power is in the present. This experienced present also represents your psychic touchstone to all of your other existences. You are consciously aware of certain events and unconsciously aware of much more that in one way or another you are learning to bring into conscious focus. The same applies to all of your other reincarnational selves. They are unconsciously aware of your conscious experience, as you are unconsciously aware of theirs. The interaction is constant, however, and in all of your presence, creative. You draw on their knowledge as they draw on yours. And this, of course, applies to personalities that you would consider future. You have a gigantic pool of information and experience to draw upon, but this will be utilized according to your present conscious beliefs. If you understand that the point of power is in the present, then you have an inexhaustible realm of ability and energy at your command. You may take a break. Session 668, June 6, 1973. Seth, good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, dictation. Slowly, notes Rob. You must remember that beginnings and endings are realities only within your own system of three-dimensional life. The energy of your being exists outside of your system, however, and impinges upon it, in your terms, becoming alive physically at certain points of time and space. Your own greater energy dips in and out of the space-time continuum as you understand it. As it does, its experience becomes physical. Within that system, then, it leaves a life trace. When you think in terms of reincarnation, it seems that one tracing exists before the other, but the entire chart exists at once with all of the individual life tracings. Since these offshoots or life tracings each come from your entity, they are connected psychologically and in terms of electromagnetic energy patterns. Consider this analogy. Taking it for granted that you are indeed multidimensional, you can perceive only so much of your own experience at a time because of the characteristics of physical creaturehood. The three-dimensional system automatically specializes in before and after effects. You exist, say, in seven different centuries at once. However, the normal experience patterns of your temporal being prevent any comprehensive view of all of those lives in creature terms. Again, what actually happens is that the energy of your being impinges, say at seven moment points, into the three-dimensional system. Rob notes, Seth first discussed his theory of moment points in a set of four sessions in April and May 1965, in connection with reincarnation and the dream universe. In the 152nd session, he stated, the whole self of which Rupert is a part is an extremely elastic one. The various portions of this whole self reach outward and inward, with much more resilience than most. It surrounds many more moment points simultaneously. Through one of these, Seth added, in a very simplified explanation, he could enter within the limits of Jane's psychic comprehension. Seth continues, at each of these points, what seems to be an isolated life is experienced. Just beyond those intersections, however, there is a more or less unitary and overall recognition of wholeness that rides above them. This represents the multidimensional entity that is both apart from and yet a part of the separate life traces. You may have an experience in the 17th century, for example. To you, it would appear that the life was a past one, finished. You may believe that your current experience, with all of its abilities and challenges, is the result of that past life, yet both exist at once. The 17th century is not dead. You follow a one-line pattern of history, pursuing certain actions as reality and identifying with these so completely that they are all you perceive. Other probable actions are always occurring, however, and are quite as valid as the ones which you happen to choose and thus experience. Your reincarnational selves have as many probable lives as you do. Your beliefs and actions in your present alter their experiences, as each of them, in their presence, change yours. If you see these reincarnational selves as one entity, then this becomes quite natural. The whole self is changed by all of its comprehensions. Now take your break. Each portion of the entity is unique and independent, and through its own beliefs, determines what it will accept in terms of influences within its immediate life situation. The great miracle, in fact, is that each consciousness, whatever its degree, is itself and no other. Even while in the unending fields of interaction, it may be a portion of another, as a city is a part of a state, or an individual is part of a family. In terms of personality, as you understand it, the individual chooses the abilities he or she will have and the life challenges. In the present, then, each person has unlimited opportunity to draw upon the entity's energy and the understanding and powers of all of its parts. It goes without saying that any human being possesses the latent ability shown by a great artist or athlete or statesman or philosopher. Within creaturehood, there are wide ranges of abilities. These may be seldom used, but they are there as practical ideas that can be expressed within that system. In the same way, every individual possesses the abilities of its entity in latent form. These too serve as practical ideas, but in a different kind of context, for you have other centuries to play with, and many existences instead of one. You often excel in situations that utterly escape you at the physical level. These accomplishments still operate through the focus of your present, since you are physically aware of but one line of probable events, so the meaning of many dream events escapes you. But in dreams, you often do work quite as valid as any performed in the day. And in the dream state, you meet and interact with your own reincarnational selves. Actually, I prefer that you think of them as simultaneous selves. In the dreaming condition, there is a great interchange of information with these other portions of yourselves. Your physical brain automatically converts such data into temporal terms so that many of your significant remembered day experiences are already translations by the time you recall them. Otherwise, they would make no sense to you at all. In many instances, you travel outside of three-dimensional reality while dreaming. But your experiences must then be recalled in physical terms, or you will have no memory of them. Even your dreams, you see, must come through that point of the present, of spirit's intersection with flesh. Dreaming does represent an open channel through which the material environment is transcended. There are, as yet undiscovered, bizarre changes in the brain during certain dream states, an acceleration that quite literally propels the consciousness out of its usual space-time continuum into those other realities from which it comes. These serve as points of unity, wherein all the various simultaneous selves meet, and certain seasonal rhythms are involved here in physical terms. Do you want a break now? Rob. No, I guess not. I wasn't too sharp this evening, though. Seth. As your spaceships to the moon must wait for the most effective overall conditions before taking off, so in other terms, are there rhythms having to do with energy? Practically speaking, this means that certain times are more effective than others for these communications in the dream state. Privately, they often involve illuminations and sudden advantageous decisions. In mass, they imply great historical changes. Take your break. Seth. These interchanges represent periods in which the soul and flesh meet under the most optimum conditions. There are individual variations and yet mass patterns. The energy of the personal self constantly comes from the entity. There is not just one intersection of soul with the flesh, therefore, but at the least a constant series, as you would think of it. Because of the characteristics of energy as it impinges upon the three-dimensional system, there are fluctuations, always involving your present. These cycles merge at several points, so that you do have major changes in all areas in any span of 2,000 years. For other reasons, and in a smaller context, the month of August is highly important in a 25-year sequence. Within this, a 7-year period is important individually. There are simple rhythms depicting the greatest impact of spirit as it intersects with flesh and time. In physical terms, the tides and geographic aspects are involved. But these are effects having to do with curves of energy of which consciousness is composed. These rhythms are minutely but perfectly reflected in other ways. The seventh dream of any given night is the most important. Not that anyone is counting. And say I said that humorously. The greatest abilities of a personality may often be brought into physical expression, however, because of certain rhythms that are not understood. In a matter of speaking, you can say that the energy of an entity is dispersed, striking the space-time continuum at certain angles and always bouncing back. But the energy is always in contact with itself, even while it impinges into physical existence. In your terms, the energy springs back in the dream state. But it must always pass through what you think of as the window of the present. This bouncing back of energy into itself is the meaning of the dream state, in which experience, that is basically non-physical, is embarked upon, and is then interpreted as a dream through the brain. Your deepest dreams involve non-material comprehensions, however. Your dream, though clearly remembered, is already a translation of the physical brain. The information then enters your present, where it biologically and mentally colors your life. It is also automatically transformed according to your beliefs, so that it makes sense to you at least to some degree. In energy terms, think of yourselves as particles, and of your experiences as the waves that flow through the particles and gives each of them its sensations. When you are physical, you are a particle. The form of the particle defines your experience as the waves permeate it, but your greater reality cannot be expressed in such limited terms. Take your break. Seth, now, as there are better times than others in your sphere of activity for sending rockets or spaceships to the moon, so there are peak periods when the self and the soul or entity coincide, when communications is at its best. All of this happens through the window of your present. In terms of energy, again, the vitality of your entity impinging into three-dimensional reality forms a particle that is your present being. But this particle is also deflected away from the earth in a rhythmic pattern. The same happens to other portions of yourself at other points in the space-time continuum, but at certain intervals you meet, so to speak. Each of your presence becomes charged, filled with potentiality, and your entity, itself, conscious energy, is also enriched by your various experiences, by the combined and magnificent power of its own past. Apexes are therefore formed within each self. These apexes serve as attractions, now opened, through which the magnified potency of the entity can flow. This may appear as erratic energy, however, an analogy being sunspots. Psychologically, great ferment occurs, and often the individual personalities involved organize themselves along new lines. Privately, this is when human beings find themselves aware of greater illumination, when they make sudden decisions and experience new strengths. Now such a time is in the offing socially. This may be reflected in periods of seeming unrest, in which, however, new creativity is looming. There will then be great planetary changes in terms of your organizations, but these will reflect private interior illuminations that become physically materialized. You do not trust your inner selves enough, or realize the creative ferment brewing. If you did, you could save yourself much trouble. I am speaking to you both individually and for the book here. Any point in your present is a potential point of great creative change, but because of the rhythms spoken of, it is easier for changes to occur in certain cycles. End of dictation and the session. My heartiest regards to you both. Rob, good night, Seth. Thank you very much. 11:40 p.m. Session 669, June 11, 1973. Reading from The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth book by Jane Roberts. Seth, now good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, dictation. Because the point of power and action is in your present as you understand it, so each day is like the kind of window that can provide many views through its different panes. The window of each day can be opened or closed, but it is framed by your current psychological experience. Even when it is shut, light shines through it, illuminating your daily life. In miniature form, each day contains, in its own way, clues to all of our simultaneous experiences. This present self does not exist in isolation. within any given 24-hour period, then traces and aspects of all of your other experiences appear in their own way. You each contain aspects of your other identities within your current selves, some very obvious, perhaps, and others barely noticeable. Abilities focused upon in one life may be recognized as your own now, for example, but not strongly utilized. Vague yearnings towards certain accomplishments may be clues that the necessary characteristics are inherent, but untrained in the self that you know. In its own way, the 24-hour period represents both an entire lifetime and as many lives in one. In it, symbolically, you have death, as your physically attuned consciousness comes to the end of the amount of stimuli it can comfortably handle without rest. So, at your normal physical death, you come to the point where your earth-attuned consciousness can no longer handle further data without a longer rest, and organize it into a creative, meaningful whole in terms of time. Each day, therefore, is an incarnation, so to speak, but not only symbolically, for through soul's intersection with the flesh, each self mirrors daily its reincarnational or simultaneous selves. The same applies on what you may think of as a more practical level, in that each day also holds within it the answers to current problems. If you are aware of a particular problem, a challenge, therefore, you can be assured that its solution is as much there and with you as the problem is. Rob notes intently, the solution is simply the problem's other side, upon which you may not be focusing. There will even be clear clues as to the proper direction for you to take. These will already be within your experience, but unrecognized, because you are concentrating so upon the problem. This applies to any kind of dilemma. Although you are an individual and with free will, you are also part of another you. You simply do not identify with your greater self now. You have your own unique characteristics. Your greater being also possesses its own originality. Yet there will be what you may think of as a family resemblance. And so, overall, you and your other self often choose the same kinds of challenges, if in dissimilar ways. In their own ways, other portions of your multidimensional being are involved in experiences then somewhat similar to your own, though on the outside, the situation may be completely different. Their progress lies latent within the window of the moment point. The moment point simply being your current intersection with the reality that you know. The adventures of your simultaneous selves again appear as traces in your own consciousness, as ideas or daydreams or disconnected images, or sometimes even in sudden intuitions. They can be drawn upon, drawn out, to help you understand current problems. You may take your break. Seth, now, this does not mean that you will necessarily have a flood of reincarnational information, instant intuitive recognition of past lives, or experience any such intrusive data. It does mean that in your own life, such information automatically appears in intimate ways. But couched within the framework of your own comprehensions, even passing unobtrusively through your conscious thoughts. Many artists unknowingly paint portraits of their simultaneous selves. Rob notes, I feel that I am such an artist. For some related material, see my notes on the 582nd session in Chapter 20 of Seth Speaks. It's enough to say here that it wasn't until after these sessions began in 1963 that I realized my inner models were quite as valid as those who physically set before me. Indeed, I often saw the former with a clearer vision, but my early training and work as a commercial artist, beginning in New York City in 1939, conditioned me to believe that the artist was supposed to deal only with what he could see objectively. For many years, I ignored the fact that in grade school, I'd very happily and freely covered my yellow tablets with the drawings of imaginary people and places. Continuing Seth, many mothers find themselves feeling younger than their offsprings at times, or about to call some of their children by different names. Impulses to try activities you have not tried before may indeed be messages from other portions of your own being. There simply is no time as you think of it, only a present in which all things occur. There are miracles of condensed information within the cells themselves that scientists cannot perceive, for they exist outside of the scope of physical instruments. In its own way, cellular comprehension includes a vast recognition of probabilities in your terms, and works with flashing manipulations in which these probabilities are contended with and responded to, and therefore altered. The physically attuned conscious mind in your now cannot handle those staggering probabilities while maintaining a sense of identity. Yet there are conscious traces within your daily thoughts that are the psychological representations of such knowledge. Often you do not trust your imagination, considering that it deals with phenomena that cannot be called fact. Therefore, you artificially form a situation in which overall traces must be made. If you are too imaginative, for example, you may not be able to adequately deal with physical life. This applies only in the cultural media in which you presently operate, however. Originally, and in your terms of time, it was precisely the imagination that in its own way set you apart from other creatures, enabling you to form realities in your mind that you could later exteriorize. Because you now distrust the imagination so, you do not understand the great clues it gives you, both in terms of problem-solving and of creative expression. Many quite valid reincarnational memories come as imaginings, but you do not trust them. A good percentage of your problems can be worked out rather easily through the use of your imagination. Often you inadvertently use it to prolong negative circumstances, as you think of all the things that you could do wrong. Yet you can employ it very constructively, altering past, present, and future. To do so in your present, freely imagine a situation in which you are happy. To begin with, your imaginings may seem foolish. If you are elderly, poor, and lonely, it may seem highly ludicrous to think of yourself as 20, wealthy, and surrounded by friends and admirers. Indeed, if after such a joyful exercise you look about you and compare what you have envisioned with what you have, then you may feel worse than you did before. You are to realize that this imaginative world does exist, but not in the world of facts that you know. To some extent, however, according to your freedom within it, such an exercise will automatically rejuvenate your body, mind, and spirit, and begin to draw to you whatever equivalent is possible for you within the world of facts that you know. Using age as an example now, it may seem to you that you are a given age, that within your subjective experience it must be paramount, that regardless of your age, you are to some extent closed off from the experience of being any other age. In some simultaneous existences, you are very young, however, and in others, very old. Some of your physical cells are brand new, so to speak, and the regeneration of fresh life is physically within you. In your terms, this is true not only until your death, but even after it, when your hair and nails can still grow. Identify then with the constant new energy alive within you in this now of your being, and realize that on all levels you are biologically and psychologically connected with that greater identity that is your own. You may take a break. Now, no matter what your current situation, the answers lie within your own aspirations and abilities. Often you will hold down or inhibit certain aspects of your experience in order to use others. Using those available will automatically free you from inhibitions in other areas. There may be physical circumstances involving birth defects that are beyond alteration, where experience must be focused along other than usual pathways. Yet even here, those talents and characteristics that are available will open up vistas of experience and achievement. When you are utilizing your imagination in the way that I have suggested, purposefully do so in a playful manner, knowing that in so-called realistic terms there may be great discrepancies between imagination and fact. In your reality, take that for granted. Yet, often, your free-willing, silly, seemingly unrealistic imagination will bring you quite practical solutions to your problems. For if the exercise is done properly, you will be automatically releasing yourself from restrictions that you have taken for granted. Even if a direct solution does not appear, rejuvenation will of itself begin to point you in the proper direction. If you are a woman in an unhappy marriage, for example, you may begin by imagining yourself with a fine suitor. Now, no Sir Galahad may appear, but if the exercise is pursued properly, you will automatically begin to feel loved, and therefore worthy of love and lovable, where before you felt rejected, unworthy, and inferior. This feeling of being loved will alter your reality, drawing love to you. You will act loved. Your spouse may then find you exhibiting characteristics of a most pleasant nature, and he himself may change. On the other hand, you may draw another man to you, and end the marriage that has served its purposes in all ways, finding now the impetus and reasons for change. Because your imagination transcends time, it is one of your greatest touchstones to your own identity. You must, of course, be able to distinguish between the world of imagination and the physical world of fact in order to be able to manipulate effectively. But physical reality springs from the imagination, which follows the path of your beliefs. In the exercise just given, you use the belief in effective change in any given area, and then allow your imagination freedom along those directed lines. Such an exercise automatically does even more, opening up the window of perception and letting in the knowledge and experience of other portions of the self. As this light and energy flows through, it will be tinted or colored by your own psychological reality, as the rays of the sun are through colored glass. This simply means that the other dimensional information will often appear in ordinary guise, through an intuitive hunch, a sudden idea, or some solution that has already occurred to you but has not been acted upon. Do you want a break? Rob, no, though I did get Jane a drink then. Still entranced, she held up her empty glass. Seth, your cell's multidimensional knowledge is usually not consciously available, nor can they put it into psychological terms for you. Such work with the imagination acts as a trigger, however, drawing information to you from other levels of your greater reality and concentrating it on the specific problem at hand. It will then appear in terms understandable to your own experience. In itself, such an exercise creatively alters probabilities, for you no longer live with the problem as an unchanging concrete reality. This is a psychological and psychic impetus, altering the messages that you habitually send to your body and to its cellular construction. You are then creatively manipulating in several layers of experience. Take, for example, the two instances just given. The older person imagining youth will, during such an exercise, reactivate certain hormonal and chemical changes, becoming younger. And the woman who feels rejected does the same thing when imagining herself loved. Such practices also activates within the self all of its unconscious but quite valid experiences, drawing out similar episodes on the part of other simultaneous lives. In one existence, the old person is young. The unloved woman is indeed beloved. These unconscious realities become turned on through the use of the imagination. Each day is a window into each life. You may take your break or end the session as you prefer. Rob, we'll take the break then. 11:59. The evening had cooled off somewhat by now, and Jane felt better, although she said noise in the house had bothered her while she'd been under. This seldom happens. At break, I reminded Jane that we wanted Seth to discuss her May 29 dream experience with bookwork. But no sooner had I done so than she began describing her dreams of last night. I'd forgotten about those for the moment. Last evening had also been very warm, and Jane had slept poorly. She kept waking up with data about dream landscapes being right there before her, and wondering if she could travel among them, like crossing fences from one backyard to the next. At the same time, she knew that all of these localities were part of a mass dream landscape. As far as she knew, the material hadn't come from Seth, Jane said, but in retrospect it seems obvious that it had been in preparation for Chapter 20. Seth was all ready to go, Jane added now, as we discussed her dream material. So the session resumed at 12:03. End Chapter 19.